This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scherr. Very often, soldiers don't want to talk about their experiences during war, but sometimes in their letters, we get a glimpse of the pain, the passion, the triumphs of war. Most soldiers are heading off. More letters will be coming home. Who knows, but that many will be in electronic form this time around, quickly jotted emails. We thought we would start, though, with the words of these soldiers. Colonel Joe M. Jackson, U.S. Air Force retired, is a Medal of Honor recipient, a resident of Kent, Washington. He joins us in our studios. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Major General Patrick H. Brady, USA retired, a Medal of Honor recipient as well. He's a resident of Sumner, Washington. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
What was your service?
Army.
You were Army.
We're both pilots.
Both pilots and both from Vietnam. I want you to tell the stories. Of course, you were also World War II. Colonel Jackson, you worked in World War II. You worked in.
I served during World War II, but I was not in combat during World War II. I was in the training command where I helped to train young pilots in aerial gunnery and also flexible gunners that were flying in B-24s and B-17s, how to be able to fire on fighters that may be attacking them. So I spent the entire war training other people.
Where were you?
Yeah, I was at Eglin Field, Florida, and at Tyndall Field, Florida. Those were the two main Southeast Training Command gunnery bases.
And then you also served in Korea.
Yes, I was with 27th Fighter Wing. Went to Daegu in the fall of 1950. Flew 107 missions in Korea.
And then Major General Brady retired. I'll say Pat and Joe from now on. You were in Germany. You were posted in Germany, but your combat was in Vietnam.
You bet. When I was in Germany was in the late 50s, early 60s. I was there during the time when they built the wall. But my combat experience was in Vietnam.
You were there when they built the wall, huh?
I was there when they built the wall. I got to go back, too, and see them tear it down, something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime.
What'd you feel when you saw that wall going up? Where were you?
Well, I was on a visit to Berlin. Part of it had to do with what was going on there at the time. I was working in the Pentagon. And I think the thing that I remember is going down to the wall and seeing the East German police and people sitting there and watching the West Germans tear the wall down and sell it. Now, the East Germans owned the wall, but of course they didn't understand free enterprise. The West Germans tore it down and they sold it by the chunk. So kind of gives you an idea of the difference between, and the difference was stark in terms of the societies when I lived in Berlin. When I first got there, you could travel back and forth. And just an incredible, same people, absolutely the same people, two different systems, absolute chaos on their side.
You have a daughter who's serving in the service now. Do you have children that have served in the service as well?
My son is a graduate of the Air Force Academy, and he served in the Air Force for 9 years before resignation.
Tell me how, you know, we are in the midst of a time in our country when war and military issues and therefore soldiers are at the forefront of our thoughts across the political spectrum, across the day. And I just wonder what your thoughts are like, Joe Jackson, and how you view the what we're standing in, how you think about this war, how you think about this country. What does it feel like for you right now as a soldier, as a veteran, as somebody who's fought?
Well, you know, watching the war from afar and listening to the news reports, I think we never get really the straight story about what's going on over there. I think it was justified that we went into Iraq, but I think we went in probably a little bit early and without a really good plan for after the war. But I think it was going to be necessary. I hate to see people killed and wounded and brought home like that, but, you know, you have to put it in perspective. During the invasion of D-Day, we were losing 1,000 men an hour.
How do you look at this?
Well, I would just second what Joe said. I carried more patients in 1 week in Vietnam than we've lost in the entire war in Iraq. So every life is precious. We hate to see it. To be pounded the way the media pounds on that, they obviously have another agenda. The most difficult thing for me, though, and all my children served in one capacity or another, but not in combat except my last one, it's the toughest thing is to not be able to go yourself. So for me to have her go there was an experience that was more horrifying than anything I ever experienced in combat.
You both served in Vietnam, a war that had its own kind of coverage. You were there, and then you came back to the States. What did you hear from people when you came back about the coverage, but perhaps the perception of the war, and how you understood the war from your perspective? Joe Jackson.
Well, a perception was depended on the age group that you were talking to. The young people were dead set against the war. I don't think they really understood it. The older people, I think, understood it and respected what was going on over there. But I remember getting on an airplane to go somewhere, and there was a young lady sitting beside me, and as soon as she saw me in uniform, she lit into me and, calling me baby killers. And
that happened to you?
All this stuff. Man, I hadn't killed a baby in all my life, you see.
We often heard that lately as that was an urban legend, that those things happened, but that happened to you.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, it happened to me, too.
It happened to you, too.
You bet.
Where were you?
I was in a radio studio in San Antonio. Doing an interview there when some young lady said that.
Regarding your Medal of Honor?
No. Regarding my... Well, I was there because I was a Medal of Honor recipient, but she was addressing my service and going on a campus to speak to the troops there. They actually put guards on me because I was in a campus in St. Louis, Missouri, because I was in uniform.
We're talking with Colonel Joe M. Jackson, U.S. Air Force retired, a Medal of Honor recipient, Major General Patrick H. Brady, U.S. Army retired, a Medal of Honor recipient. Since the Civil War, 39 million men and women served in the armed forces. Over 3,400 were presented the Medal of Honor, nation's highest award. To be recommended for a Medal of Honor, a soldier must perform an act of personal bravery or self-sacrifice. The act must involve risk of life, and the action must represent gallantry above the call of duty and have at least two eyewitnesses. Always, I like that caveat there. You have to have somebody else.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. For any award, you have to have an eyewitness, any valor award. And the listeners need to know that medals are a function of witnesses and a function of people who take the time to write you up because
something happened important.
Well, not necessarily, because they saw something and they wrote it up, because what I did that day, I did every day. And so did everybody around me. What I did was no more significant than anybody else in my unit. But somebody that day was kind enough to take the time to write it up and to gather the witnesses. And that's just basically a simple fact.
How did you, Joe Jackson, come to... Who were the... Do you know who the witnesses were for yours?
Well, I don't know exactly who all of the witnesses were, but the guy that made me the initial recommendation for me to receive it, believe it or not, was General Westmoreland himself. When he saw the action being completed, he was in the command center at Saigon, and he turned to the Air Force component commander that was there and says, "Well, it looks like you have a Medal of Honor."
What were you doing the day that Pat Brady, the actions entailed that you got the Medal of Honor?
I was a part of a dust-off unit. To give you an idea, six aircraft, six helicopters, 40 men, and all we did all day long was to pick up the wounded. And so that particular day, I was not on duty. I got called very early in the morning for the first of a series of eight missions that were involved in the Medal of Honor action. But to give you an idea, to make my point about the way these things work, that unit, a 40-man detachment, in a 9-month period, evacuated over 20,000 patients. They did that with three aircraft available at any one time because of enemy action. Averaged seven out of the six aircraft shot up every month by enemy action. 23 of the 40 men were shot or got a Purple Heart in that period. So now you tell me I did anything different than any of the rest of them. It was something we did day in, day out, and as I said, somebody just happened to write it up.
And Joe Jackson, what happened to you that day?
Well, my
what
day.
What were you doing that day, I should
well,
say?
Well, my day was the 12th of May, Mother's Day. I always had to get that plug in about Mother's Day, but my mission was supposed to be rather routine, going up down the coast hauling passengers and supplies to Army bases and Special Forces camps. And this was in northern part of South Vietnam. And at about noon, I got a recall to go to my home base to help in an emergency evacuation. And that was the evacuation at Special Forces Camp Cam Duc. The camp was being overrun by something like between 4,000 and 6,000 North Vietnamese was going to attempt to overrun the camp at Cam Duc so that the Vietnamese would have a better bargaining position at the beginning of the Paris peace talks. When I got there and went into orbit waiting my turn, the evacuation was taking place down below, and we the Air Force had lost something like 8 airplanes there since that morning. The rate of wounded and killed was pretty high. And by the time it got around to me, there was only 3 men left, and the communists had taken over the entire base. And so my job was to go in and pick up those 3 guys under heavy fire. Of course, the North Vietnamese had no opposition at that time, and they could fire at will, and they were in complete control of the base.
So they shot a rocket at your plane as you were taking off?
Well,
right at the nose, huh?
They did that while we were sitting on the ground like a sitting duck, and the rocket came down the runway, and it hit and broke in half, and it stopped right in front of the nose of the airplane, but it didn't go off. And if it had, you certainly would have had another person to interview this morning. I wouldn't have been among them.
You know, some people come back, write about war, and they write about how they're sickened by it and then turn politically against it. I already got one email saying this is not appropriate to talk politics on this, but it seems like politics, or let's say values or beliefs, are wrapped up in all of this. Mm. And I wonder how, down through the years, you look back on that war.
On Vietnam?
I mean, those moments. Yeah. I shouldn't say the war itself, but those moments. I mean, like, that's a lot of people.
There's no way that anybody could do what Joe and I did, which was to save lives. And there is nothing in life like it. I mean, to look at obstacles, enemy action, fire, terrain, weather, whatever, to overcome those obstacles and to get your hands on a wounded human being and put them in the hands of a physician who then saves their lives. I mean, that's better than sex. It's better than lobster. There's nothing in the world that can describe the feeling that you get to save the life of a fellow soldier.
Joe Jackson, you must hear many people say, yes, but if we didn't have the war in the first place, we wouldn't have this kind of carnage.
Well, you see, it was not our option to either start the war or anything. We're military people. And when we're directed to go, we go. We went over there and we did the best we could because that was our job.
All right. Let me bring Georgie in, who's holding with us. Hello, Georgie.
Yes?
How are you?
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm feeling good after what I've heard some of it. But anyway.
Why is that?
I'd like to say that my husband was an ambulance driver during World War II, and he was one of those who came back very upset about any kind of war again. And I'd like to read a little bit of his letter that he wrote to me from a foxhole. And he writes, "I am writing you what might be my last letter. The Japanese artillery is laying them down all around us. Any one of them might have my name on it, but thank God it hasn't. I went out with medical supplies and was sniped at most of the way. Came back here and where shells have been whining over my head every minute. Everyone has moved out, but 4 ambulances, and I am one of them. We will bring up the rear guard with a retreating infantry carrying their casualties. We have been promised air support till noon tomorrow by the Royal Air Force. As I lie in this foxhole, darling, I think of you and my thoughts are very vague. I haven't lived a full life like some people. There are a lot of things I haven't done, and there are a lot of things I yet want to do. The one main one is to see you again. We might have been made for each other if we had. Think of what we both would have missed if I don't get out of here. It is hotter than Hades in this foxhole. The sweat is running off from me in streams. My body is bathed in it. Darling, I love you, and I would forsake all others for you. If I am the lucky one and finally marry you, all my dreams in India and Burma will have been fulfilled. I can't write much more. I'm choking. I want to cry. Everyone is a baby at heart, I guess, but they are not atheists. God, may I be spared so I can go back to Georgie. She is the one and only one for me. Spare me, I pray. I love you, darling. I love you. I love you. And this was written into his diary because he didn't think he would ever get out. Luckily, the British broke through the next day, and he was spared.
That's a good letter. But that's one. All right, Georgie, thank you. Let me read you a last letter here. This is from Vicky, who sent this letter, said, I heard you were going to do this today, and I'm not going to be able to read this letter, but also I think I would have a hard time reading it. This is a letter that was sent to her father, October 26, 1917. She found it when she was compiling a memorabilia of his life. It was very unusual to have. I was very unusual to have a father serving in the First World War when all my friends' fathers served in Second World War. I'm sure you'll understand why. I was moved when you read this letter. It was from the headmaster from the school he attended in Birmingham, England, though he migrated to Canada. My dear Arthur, October 26, 1916. An old boy on leave came to see me last week and informed me that you have come back from Canada and had gone out to the front. I therefore sent to your home to procure your address so that I might get into communication with you. I sincerely hope that you are keeping well and strong and that you will pass unharmed through all the dangers of war. Indeed, I trust that the day is not far distant when you will be back home with us again. It will be an infinite pleasure for me to see you once more. Now a short time, it seems, since you were at school, and yet how much you have gone through since those days. Sights and experiences, many of which you would faint forget, will be yours forever. Through all, I know that earnest duty and wholehearted devotion to the great cause will be yours. For that spirit which was in you as a boy is without doubt in you now, strengthened and developed by all you have passed through. We at home will never forget what we owe to you and to other lads. It's just part of a letter that he got from his headmaster in 1916. Colonel Joe M. Jackson, Medal of Honor recipient, thank you for talking with us.
Glad
retired,
to be here.
I should say, U.S. Air Force retired, and Major General Patrick Brady, U.S. Army retired, Medal of Honor recipient. Thank you for talking with us.
Pleasure.
I'm Steve Scher. Thanks for listening to Weekday on KUOW Seattle.